All right, good morning, everyone. This is the Georgia Prison News weekly morning radio show. Thanks for everyone that's joining us today. Going to be talking about today several things that transpired this past week, or it's not this past week yet because we're still in the week, but they'll be talking about things that transpired throughout this week in the Department of Corrections. Just several key things that I believe you need to be made aware of, and we hope that you will call in and join us. You can call in. The number is 516-387-1865. Again, that's 516-387-1865. We'll take your phone calls all morning long. I have joined me this morning Susan Sparks Burns, who is the founder of They Have No Voice. You can find that group on Facebook, a very outstanding group. She keeps you informed of everything that's going on inside the Department of Corrections. She does a lot. Susan, you with me?
I am. Morning, everybody. Terrific.
Good.
I,
so, yeah, we...
Good.
Yeah, we've had a very interesting week, I would say.
We didn't come, let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's a lot going on, a lot to digest, so I guess we're going to jump right into it this morning. Let's start with the updated numbers that we've received as of yesterday from the GDC on the confirmed cases of COVID-19.
Yes, and the numbers as of yesterday evening, 72 staff confirmed, 83 offenders confirmed, and on recovered cases, 10 staff and 35 offenders. Now, we have learned in past week what the parameters are for saying a person is confirmed. And basically, it's 7 days without symptoms beyond a positive test.
Right.
Yeah.
And we know also, and I'm trying to get to pull up on my screen here the things that they look for in a test that has been negative so far. So. Do you have that in front of you, Susan? Because I'm trying to pull it up.
I probably can get to it pretty easily, though.
Okay. So, yeah, the numbers continue to rise. We're hearing cases continually all over the state. I will send a message yesterday evening. On Clayton, T.C., where a guy passed out in the day room and had to be sent to the Atlanta Medical Center, and they are expecting a positive for COVID-19 to come back as positive. So the numbers are rising throughout the state of Georgia with the offender population. So, we continue to see the numbers rise. I don't know much on what the Department of Corrections is doing to try to get these numbers to fall. I did see yesterday, Susan, and I don't know if you saw it, but the Department of Corrections has started sending teams of crews in. I think they're officers. I don't know how much experience they have, but they've actually went into 13 or 14 facilities now. The Department of Correction did not release the 14 facilities that they have went into already, and they've they went in and they've cleaned, supposedly cleaned from the top to bottom, living quarters for the offenders. But like I said, they didn't release what 14 facilities there were, these were, or anything like that. So we really don't know what facilities they were that was cleaned. And I haven't heard word from anyone on them actually seeing anyone come in and clean. Have you?
I have not. No, I have not heard that.
Yeah, so that was just something yesterday that was something yesterday that the Department of Corrections put out. I think it was a tweet, and it may be on their Facebook page as well, that they sent officers in and they had all this protective gear on and they were actually inside of a dorm cleaning. So, but like I said, they didn't give much information on what facilities these were.
I'll take a look over at their Twitter page and see what they've got there. I hope that whatever here we go. Did you know that the GDC began chemical fogging as an enhancement to the sanitation measures already in place to help lessen the spread of COVID-19? Thanks to dedicated staff working 7 days a week, 14 facilities have been completed and work will continue until all have undergone this process. Uh-huh. So I see what they're doing. It's a handheld fogger. And some are spraying.
Right.
It appears to be spraying handrails and fogging the air in general.
Right. So, and this is my thing on that, Susan, and you can kind of touch on this as well. But I've heard stories from loved ones who has family members and friends incarcerated that at some facilities, officers and staff are not wearing protective masks, so they can clean all they want. But as soon as these people get back into the population and they are around, staff members and whatnot, the spread can still continue. And another thing that I want to touch on real briefly is, and I did not know this until the other day, but staff cases are self-reportable. So if the staff doesn't report that they have COVID-19, if they don't report that they're feeling bad or anything like that, then the GDC just doesn't know. They're not testing officers for this COVID-19. So, I don't understand, the process of how the GDC is trying or is going to try to just stop this spread and outbreak.
Nor do I. I think the way that this is being reported just opens it up to more questions than it gives us answers. I am pretty well befuddled by the spraying when there hasn't been any cleaning, that is, the removal of the soil. I appreciate that this is an effort, but without removing the dirt.
And like I said, it goes back. I mean, you can clean all you want, members and your employees aren't wearing protective masks, and they're sick, and they don't even know that they have COVID-19, or they don't think they have it, but they don't know because their cases are self-reported. They can clean all they want, but as soon as they go back into these facilities, that's going to be spreading because they're not wearing masks. I understand that they have told people to wear these masks, and I've heard from offenders in these facilities that they have to wear masks now, but I don't think it's a I don't think the GDC has actually mandated that these masks be worn.
I don't believe so either. The way what I've heard has gone like this. Some of the staff seem to be wearing their masks around their neck as if it's like a bandana, and they're getting ready to do the robbery of the train or something.
Right.
They're around their neck. And I've heard that inmates may be wearing the masks outside, but when they go into the dorm, they take their masks off. I think that's the opposite of how this ought to be working.
Right. And for our listeners, and I don't mean to cut you off, Susan, I'll give you a chance to come back and chime in just a second. But for all of our listeners out there that has loved ones in these facilities, I think it's pretty apparent now that the Department of Corrections is not doesn't care about the health and safety of your loved ones and your friends and whatnot. So I'd encourage you, when you speak with them, if it's through the JPay email, if it's by phone calls, I know some facilities are allowing phone calls, and some facilities are locked down, and some facilities are just doing different things. But I would encourage you to let them know to always wear that mask. Officers come in to count. Staff members do walkthroughs. I heard today that Augusta State Medical Prison, that staff is actually doing a walkthrough there this morning and walking through dorms and things. So, I mean, I would encourage you to have them wear their protective mask at all times, outside of the building, inside of the building, because, I mean, we just don't know what these officers and what these staff members have and pass around. I mean, as I said, I'm expressing this concern because, like I said, the cases are continuing to rise, and we just have we don't know what officers have to have this, because I mean they're having a self report, and I mean, and I'm not going to say that all officers are bad, but I mean, do you really believe that an officer who's barely making enough to survive is going to want to report that they're feeling sick or they're feeling that they have any symptoms in order to stay off and lose money? So I mean, you know, it's just, I believe that we need to stress to our loved ones and our friends that they need to continue to wear these protective gear, and they need to, take care of themselves as best as possible, wash their hands. There's not any social distancing in prison that can really be done. I mean, I've seen pictures, and I know from experience that, in some cases, bunks are six bunks and cells have six and seven people in them. So, it's just not very possible to do social distancing in prison. And also, another thing, and I'm coming to you, Susan, another thing is please stress to them not to smoke after one another. I mean, we know everything that's in prison. We don't have to go into all of that. But I'd ask that y'all make sure that they're not smoking after each other, they're not drinking after each other, whatever the case may be with that, that they kind of just, do as best as possible, because, they're not going to be taken care of how we would take care of them if they had, came down with the virus. So, Susan, I didn't mean to go on my morning rant, but I'll let you come in and kind of piggyback off of anything.
You did just fine up on the soapbox. CDC issued these. This is for jails and prisons and other types of institutions. But you can make, they say you have to adapt it to your facility. In common areas, there's being enforced increased space between people in holding cells, in lines, waiting and intake, like removing every other chair in a waiting area. In terms of recreation, to do it outside and to spread out, and that each housing unit have a dedicated space so that they avoid cross-contaminating from one unit to the next. Meals that are in the dining hall, staggering the meals, removing every other chair, or using only one side of the table so it's not breathing onto someone else. Group activities, limiting the size, doing it outside. Housing, this is kind of interesting. Reassigning bunks to provide more space between people and sleeping head to foot. So in bunks, there may be something to that. I have yet to talk with anyone who has seen any implementation of that, however.
No, and I haven't either. And I think we discussed this a little bit last week. I don't know, and people can go to the Georgia Prison News Facebook group and actually search the group, or just look through some of the posts in the group, and you'll see the picture that I posted that I received a few weeks ago of the actual living quarters of a transitional center. And if you just look at the picture, you'll be able to see. There ain't no social distancing going on in that facility. I mean, the bunks are three man high, and the spacing between them are non-existent.
Yes. Very difficult to have any social distancing in a living quarters like that.
Right.
I would love to know the progress on the release of the 200, how that's gone. I haven't actually heard of more than a handful of people who are being released, and all of those have been scheduled for release anyway.
Hey, Susan, do you possibly think that was just that announcement was just possibly a way of telling people to shut up and chill out and at that time there was an outcry of people requesting that the department release nonviolent and medically ill people, and there was change.org petitions, and there was hundreds and hundreds of postings online, and there was groups. My group, Human and Civil Rights Coalition of Georgia, sent a letter to the parole board. ACLU sent letters to the parole board. Numerous groups sent letters to parole board, and I think that they probably just got tired of hearing from everyone and just decided let's issue this statement that we're going to release 200 people from a 60,000 person state agency, and that'll calm everybody down, and that'll get everybody off our back.
And I think that's exactly what it is. And in terms of how one approaches a project, you always look at the desired endpoint. How much did they need to do to prepare, to set aside areas for quarantine, areas for lockdown, hospital beds for the truly sick, and so forth? They probably needed space to do that. And releasing two people from a facility with 1,500 is spit in the ocean.
Yeah. And it's almost laughable because, as I said, there's 60,000. I think there's I haven't looked at the numbers, but there's close to 60,000 offenders in Georgia right now. And they're talking about 200 people. And don't get me wrong, anyone that can be released and should be released, should be released, but 200 people was actually almost a laughable number with a 60,000 population.
Yeah, it's 0.3%.
And like I said, to even put that out, I think that they people were holding their feet to the fire, and they needed some breathing room. So I think they released that to say, hey, look what we're gonna do. Because as I've said, I've heard only a handful of people that has actually been released. Now I have seen some people's dates been moved up and whatnot, but as far as actual releases, I've heard nothing.
In fact, one man I know, he was scheduled for later this year, and he is going to be released earlier, but it's still 45 days away.
Right, and so, you know, I don't know. It's almost laughable what these agencies do. And Susan, I kind of want to pivot a little to the situation that's going on at Baldwin State Prison. I think you received some correspondence on yesterday on some things that's going on at Baldwin, and I think that we need to inform our listeners on exactly what's going on there at Baldwin. So I'll let you jump in here and let everyone know what's taking place at Baldwin.
I'll be glad to. I had a call yesterday morning with another mother inmate. Most of y'all probably know that my son he's out now, but with his mother, and her son happens to be in a particular dorm at Baldwin, and one of the fellows in his dorm had been sick. This man is, he's already 29 years, and he reported that what happened to him in the last 21 days, he'd never seen anything like it in 29 years in prison, and he hoped that he never did. He became sick and was in quarantine for 7 days, and then he was in medical isolation for 7 days, and when he became sicker, he was 14 days in quarantine. He described it as inhumane beyond anything he'd ever experienced. Apparently, they're using the hole at Baldwin to house the sick, and the sick inmates are housed in two-man cells. Many of the sick inmates are mentally ill, and they are older men, apparently. But those mentally ill inmates are being kept naked, without a mattress, no sheets, blankets, and no showers. In the 3 weeks he was there, no showers, no clean clothes.
Wow.
They have buckets to use as toilets, but no toilet paper. The showers themselves are being used as cells. And, well, where do they sleep? They sleep on the floor. And where do they use the bathroom? They have a bucket. And there are no cleaning materials. There's no cleaning going on. There's no showering because people are sick in those showers locked in there. This man described that one of the cells contained two men, one who was the sexual aggressor and was raping the other every day. And the weaker man would crawl under the bottom bunk, and then at some point the bigger guy would pull him out, and he would scream and cry for help, and but completely ignored as if that wasn't happening and everybody down there could hear it. No, I do think sometimes you have to take what's here with a grain of salt, but this is so bad. It's only half true. It's horrendous if it's half true.
Right.
What he described, though, does not reflect Baldwin's numbers. As of last night, they have four inmates, they say, are sick. And what this man was describing is many more than four.
Oh, sure. And I think that these, their numbers are not reflecting what we're hearing. And, you know, and I want to stop for a second and say this. These guys in these facilities, when they report this stuff, the GDC looks at it as they're lying or, you know, they're not. They look at it as, this person or these individuals are exaggerating or whatever. But I want to tell you, from doing time, and I can tell you this, and officers will tell you all the time, and there's a saying of inmate.com and or whatever it is or different sayings, but you won't believe how many times an officer has told me that inmate.com is more accurate than the Department of Corrections is when it comes to things that happen in these facilities. So, I think that, when this stuff is going on, I mean, we're not hearing from the Department of Corrections. And let me back up and say this. If it's not true, the department should issue some type of statement and say that this is not true. There's case after case after case dealing with the Department of Corrections, whether it be newspaper articles, any press briefings, or whatever the case may be. They never deny or anything like that. They never ask the journalists and the groups that report this stuff to retract something that they reported. So, I mean, what are you leading? Us to believe if you don't comment or you don't deny what's actually taking place, in these facilities.
It's a tacit agreement. If they don't say, hold it right there, AJC, you need to print a refraction. If they don't say that, it is a tacit agreement that what's being alleged may actually be true. I had that confirmed a couple of days ago by one of the journalists from one of the newspapers. He said exactly that send, when they're writing an article about the GDC, they send them the article for comment, and they never get a comment.
Right. All right. And this week there was some things that was going on. A couple of our followers contacted a couple facilities about soap at these facilities. And actually, the person that they contacted, which was was a coordinator for transitional centers, wouldn't release any information to them. She told them that if they wanted to information on anything that's taking place at any facility to contact the Department of Corrections PR department. That's just a throw off to, I'm not wanting to answer any of your questions, and it's none of your business.
Hey, and that's not completely unexpected. Major corporations, I came out of the food industry, they always have a plan for what if they were to have a recall, who's allowed to speak on behalf of the company. And that has to be a very small number of people just to make sure that the message doesn't get garbled. So, I mean, that's okay, but when you refer to the PR department, they decline to respond.
Right.
And that's the problem. There is no statement.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a bunch of baloney, in between of them not being able to comment on these issues. But you know, like I said, and I think me and you was talking yesterday, you know, it would be, well, I don't know if it was me and you, but I think I made a comment. Well, you know, the department puts themselves in these situations, because when something happens, whether it's true or not, instead of just coming out and say, you know, this is not true, or, you know, we're doing this or we're doing that, they just don't, you know, they don't even respond, you know, to this stuff that comes out. So, you know, it, what are we to believe? You know, I'm a type of person where, you know, if you don't deny it, or if, you know, you don't make a statement about it, then there's some truth to something that's being reported.
Yeah, I agree. So, Jonathan, sure. Joshua, go ahead, please, and tell some more about what happened with the stuff.
Yeah, so, okay, and we'll get into this now. So, we had an individual, as many of you know, we've been collecting and taking donations for soap to pass out to the facilities, as many facilities as possible, and we want to do all facilities. Pass out a bar of Dial soap, antibacterial soap, to the offender population at these facilities. So, you know, we've been trying to get this soap passed out. You know, we have right at 2,000 bars now that we're trying to get into these to the hand. So, Thursday, our individuals spoke with Johnson State Prison, and they said that they would allow us to bring this soap into their facility on Friday morning. So our individual proceeded to Johnson State Prison yesterday and was stopped at the gate and was told that that the Department of Corrections was not accepting donations right now. When I heard about this, I immediately thought that it was odd that they would, just the day before, would allow or would tell someone that, you know, the donation would be accepted and to bring it on. And then the next day, when that person gets there, they're telling them that there's, you know, a statewide memo that there's no donations being taken at this time. So anyway, thought that was strange. A few hours later, the individual contacted me and told me that Commissioner Ward had contacted him personally and told him that his access to GDC facilities had been revoked, and he was no longer allowed to enter into any state facility, any state prison facility, in the future or possibly ever again. You know, the soap did not get into those guys' hands yesterday. This individual had received, like I said, which was just the craziest part, received a phone call from Timothy Ward himself at about 5:30 yesterday, banning him and him access into these facilities. So needless to say, the soap was not passed out yesterday. And in the process, this individual has been banned from the facility for attempting to help right the wrong that the Department of Corrections has done, you know, and passing out the soap.
It defies logic, at least to me. I while this was going on, possibly even within an hour or so of that phone call, had a on they have no voice asking, can please somebody get some soap to the people at Altry? And I responded, I don't think we can.
Right. So,
and
I also learned on yesterday why someone had sent me information on an actual commission, well, not commission. I think she's on the board of the commission board or whatever it's called. You might can tell people what it's called, but she actually, what's it called?
The Board of Corrections.
Right. So a member of the Board of Corrections actually went to two facilities yesterday and passed out soap. So we thought that it was very strange that this organization and this individual who's on the Board of Corrections was able to go in and make a donation of soap. But when we tried to make this donation to soap for soap, it was turned away. Which we just thought very strange. So, you know, the commissioner did accuse this individual of participating in a smear campaign and a bashing campaign of the Department of Corrections, which I've not, and I know 100% that this individual has not posted a single negative word on the Department of Corrections, on any staff member, on any person associated with the Department of Corrections. This person has not said anything. This person is was just offered to help. Georgia Prison News and the Human Rights Coalition of Georgia made a donation to his ministry in order to help, as I said, right the wrong of the department not doing anything, of giving this little bitty bar of soap, which is a joke, which doesn't last. I mean, if a person bathes every day, Susan, this little bit that little bit of bar of soap the Department of Corrections gives, is gonna last possibly maybe 3 days. And they give this bar of soap out once a week on Friday. And it looks like they possibly up this bar of soap to maybe giving two out now. But whatever the case is, I think that, you know, it shows the mentality. It shows the it should show people in the state of Georgia how the department, how the higher-ups in the department treats individuals and treats our loved ones. I still today can't wrap my brain around how discussing issues that's taking place within the Department of Corrections is a smear campaign or a bash campaign against the Department of Corrections. I mean, you got to look at it. They created this. They had 2 months to prepare for this. They had 2 months to prepare for this pandemic that's hit the prison system, and they failed to act. You know, they failed to prepare for what's taking place in the prison system, and now they want to get butt hurt, and I use that word because I don't want to use the other word, but they get butt hurt now because people are out here on social media, in groups on Facebook, on Twitter, on various groups, issuing or discussing their negligence. And, you know, they go and they ban a guy who's been in the prison system ministering, giving his blood, sweat, and tears for the last 10 years, who's not even associated with the Human and Civil Rights Coalition of Georgia, Georgia Prison News. They have no voice. And they go out of spite and ban this guy from entering their facilities to minister to our loved ones. I personally think that is beyond the veil. I think that is hateful. It's spiteful. It's heartless. It's cowardly. And I think that that taking place is that what took place yesterday. I think it's cowardly and it's shameful. At the same time that that the Department of Corrections will go and ban this individual for trying to help these people out. It's awful. Go ahead, Susan.
I couldn't agree more. There's a meanness to this act, this action by Commissioner Ward that surprised a lot of us. The person who's been banned, I don't believe has ever posted anything negative about prison system. And he serves. He's got a heart for service. And Commissioner Ward apparently knew how to actually really hurt him. And I'm sure it did. I'm sure that did. Inmates have rights. They have civil rights that are guaranteed by the Eighth Amendment. Now, we all learn in school that's the freedom from cruel and unusual punishment. In the time since the amendments were made, there's been other legislation, and I believe in 1998, CRIPA was passed, the Civil Rights of Institutionalized Persons Act. And it says that, I'm paraphrasing, of course, that the Departments of Correction have the responsibility to protect the inmates and to provide for the inmates. By definition, inmates have their defenses taken away from them. They have very little in the way of choices on how to live. Their health should be provided for, and that includes protection from becoming sick. It includes nutrition, adequate nutrition, but also food that is made and produced under acceptable food safety conditions. It includes medications that they should receive their medication. They should have in good working order, plumbing, hand washing, where they can wash their hands with 110 degree water, soap dispensers, toilet, showers, ventilation, heat. We're coming up on the need for ice, and as well as safety and protection from violence and assault, from extortion, from any number of things that are all present when someone goes to prison. It's the job of the prison system to protect them. They don't have to like the person or love what the person has to protect them. The lack of preparedness for this pandemic is stunning.
Oh, yeah.
If anyone listening has any complaints at all about how this has handled, by all means, there is a place to report it to, and it's not to the Department of Corrections in Georgia, and that's the Department of Justice, the U.S. Department of Justice Civil Rights Division, and their special litigation group. Their special litigation group deals specifically with people who are institutionalized. And if you don't think your loved one has received appropriate medical care, including the prevention of illness and the treatment of this illness, then by all means, make your opinion known. We as loved ones of those incarcerated, as well as the incarcerated themselves, have a right to file a complaint. It's easy to do. You can pick up the phone and call the Department of Justice. They have two phone numbers. When I get off of this today, I'll post it again. But you don't have to give an awful lot of information. You have to give your name and your contact information, the specifics of the issue, and they ask
right.
if you know similar situations, give that information as well. It's easy to do. Speak up.
Yeah.
This is going to continue.
I mean, and it's been going on for so long that, it's just at a point now when I think with this has shed new light on everything that's kind of taking place.
I believe so. Adversity can give you an opportunity to shine, to do a good job, or it can really show up all your weaknesses. And I'm afraid the weaknesses have been on parade. A little bit off the subject, do you know if anybody is actually receiving treatment when they get sick? Are they receiving the Z-Pak and the Paxlovid combination that's recommended?
I haven't heard. I guess we could kind of see that on the young lady at the what was it Metro TC that actually was there in the cell for a couple weekends ago.
Was that a gun?
Uh-huh.
Or was that Metro? Yeah.
Yes.
Have you heard any update on her treatment there?
I have not. I know that she that was a confirmed case. It's the only confirmed case they've had.
And I know she was when I, last I checked, she was still at that facility. So I don't know how that facility could possibly handle that type of treatment that she would need.
Support for breathing. That would be available, and a TC, it's hard for me to imagine that they have the ability to supplement her oxygen, for example.
Right, so that probably gives us, our answer to that question. I have heard that, what I've heard is, while they're waiting to be confirmed for the while they're waiting on test results, they're put in a cell and have their temperature checked, I think, two or three times a day while they're waiting on test results to come back. So, but I have not heard as far as treatment wise, what type of treatment that they're.
Joshua, have you heard from around the state? Are they continuing to check the temperatures of people coming to work?
I have.
Stop?
No, I believe that is still taking place. And I think they're also working on some other measures to go into effect, like spraying bleach on shoes as they enter as well.
Yeah. That's pretty easily done. They make mats. You have a pad in them, and you can pour the bleach solution in there, and it's moist enough that it'll, it's something people have to walk through. I guess a foot bath, essentially.
At this particular facility, what I've heard is that they were
spraying bleach on shoes that they were or they were attempting to start spraying bleach on shoes as they entered into the facility, but I don't know how it worked or if they're going to do it statewide or if it was just this one facility or anything like that. Maybe the Department of Corrections will release that information and let us know.
Yeah, I think we've probably come to the conclusion that we don't know much.
Yeah, I don't think they're very interested in allowing anyone to know. It's top secret.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to write to the man who was Baldwin. I don't know that my letter will get through, but I'm going to give that a try. I'd like to hear it basically from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, because I think that, you know, at this point, Susan, I think that, you know, that we, you know, we should, we just got to continue. Isn't it awful about the prison doctor at Macon State being confirmed for COVID-19 is actually in ICU on a ventilator right now? With COVID-19.
Oh, my goodness. And the death this past week of a deputy warden as well. I believe that was at Calhoun.
Right, that's at Calhoun, right. So, you know, I mean, this is serious, and unfortunately, it's been passed right down to the population. So, you know, I wish there was more measures in place, but I mean, you know, I don't. It's just, I think it's heartbreaking.
I do as well. It's pretty impotent to sit by and watch this happen when it's so predictable that jails and prisons are hotbeds of communicable illnesses like this. You just about can't stop it because of the, you know, especially in a jail. Rockdale County, where I live, actually requested and received the National Guard to come in to sanitize the jail. My understanding was that they had so many officers sick that they couldn't do it themselves.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think that's needed for the state. I mean, I don't know if our beloved governor is going to step up and actually. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are going to have to be before he steps in and does anything as far as prison.
But in his press conference this week, he did mention using the National Guard to go into nursing homes, and that their purpose there would be twofold: one, to clean and sanitize, and the other, to provide additional education to all the people in a nursing home. And you can see that they would have some special needs where you might have people who are mobile but need to have their hand on their walker or the wall or something for support. There's probably a lot more transmission with touching than would happen out here. I can see that would be a good use of the guard. Boy, I'd love to see the guard called up to help clean and sanitize the prison facilities, but we better not hold our breath.
No, and you know, there's some facilities that caters, prison facilities that actually caters to a more singular population. A couple that comes to mind is Augusta State Prison, Johnson State Prison. that comes to mind. And you know, it, I mean, these are hotbeds for this virus spread. I mean, we already see the numbers. There was, as I said earlier, there was 10 more confirmed cases of Johnson on yesterday. And that's a place where a lot of sick people are, along with Augusta State as well.
You know, I heard yesterday from someone at Augusta State Medical, and then what I was told was that there are a number of people who are being isolated because they think that they have presumptive cases. But of course, there are no inmates being reported sick there, and only one staff person, and that is a large prison.
Oh yeah.
The elderly go there because they've got multiple comorbidities.
Yeah, and I mean that's the number one spot for all medical procedures and thing that, you know, where everyone goes for, you know, any type of healthcare. Well, one of the major ones. I think that's probably still the number one that they send everyone to. But you know, that place there is for you know, there's a lot of older mental health people there where that I could see becoming the number one spot for the virus. You know, just to take it over because of, you know, the age of the people there and. Things like that. So,
yeah, there are a lot of them. A lot of these inmates who are elderly are pretty fragile. I think we'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge that this week, I believe it's on Tuesday or Wednesday, the ACLU did write letters to the Board of Pardons and Paroles requesting the release of two specific inmates. One in his mid-60s, one in his early 80s. I'm glad that happened, but
that was great.
Yeah, it's only two. But oh well.
Yeah, are you still with me, Susan? I think you broke up.
I'm sorry.
Oh, that's right. But yeah, like I say, I was glad to see the ACLU. When someone sent me that in my messages, I was really glad to see that. That was great for them to do.
Yeah. One of my friends, it's one of my friend's fathers. It's the elderly man, in his 80s, and he's been in for 4 years. And he has never been in trouble in his life, but he got in trouble for this. And how many people, you know, go to prison and they've never been in trouble in their life? Well,
yeah, and Susan, we're going to do a show here soon. And I haven't spoke with you about it, but I'm almost positive that you'll do it with me. We're going to be doing a show here probably in the next couple of weeks on the individuals that's been doing 30, 40 years in Georgia in our prison system. And, you know, I posted something this week, and it got a lot of reaction from our group members on the guy that had done 44 years for a crime that he committed when he was a juvenile. And the guy just died this week with complications due to COVID-19. We're going to be doing a show, and I hope you'll join me on it, because I think it's very important that we bring to light these individuals who are in our prison system who doesn't pose a threat. There's older individuals that's been doing 30, 35, 40 years in this system. And I mean, you know, these people are
they're wiser now. They're older. They, you know, they have more of an understanding. And you know, and you know, they're in our prison system. And you know, I mean, what threat do these people pose to the safety and you know, of these communities now? After I mean, what threat does a person 40 years incarcerated? You know, I have my beliefs on that, you know, but, you know, at some point, you know, those people should be released. And, you know, but, you know, this is Georgia where, you know, they're not interested in, you know, releasing even the critically ill who can get COVID-19, and, you know, be very sick and possibly die. They're not even interested in releasing them. So, you know, it's just, you know, our system is it sometimes a sickness. You know, and it's just I don't know the words to even, you know, try to go to explain my views on our system here in Georgia. I mean, it's outdated system. It's, you know, it's a cruel system. You know,
it is. You would think at some point the state has gotten its pound of flesh. So I have just received, like a couple of minutes ago, a note from Lee Arendelle that one of the younger women there has been taken out in an ambulance.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh,
so, yeah, I mean, you know, so, I mean, to our listeners, you know, this is real. You know, we don't do this to bash or smear or anything like that. You know, we do this to help you guys learn what's taking place in these facilities. And, you know, they're doing nothing to help the situation. You know, we don't know what they're doing, if they're doing anything. So we have to say they're not doing anything because, you know, they haven't released anything that they're doing to help this situation. You know, so, you know, it's not a smear campaign. It's not a bashing campaign. You know, we're trying to present the facts and we're trying to do something to, you know, for this to become an even more bigger outcry than it is now, Susan.
Yes, absolutely. I want to do my best to facilitate making the situation better. We can drive change in Department of Corrections, but it's not going to be by going head to head with the Department of Corrections.
Right. No. You know,
that's
go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
Oh, that just isn't going to be an effective way to drive change. They seem to be perfectly happy with the status quo.
Yeah, and you know, the status quo is, you know, I think it's, and I hopefully, and I pray every day that, you know, the status quo is, it's starting to, you know, to fade away because, you know, I just don't know, you know, what, you know, is going to change with them as far as, you know, the conditions in their facilities, you know, and like I say, the status quo, I mean, at some point they have to change. And if it takes this event, you know, to make change come, you know, then, you know, there's just something that they're going to have to deal with. But, you know, this department needs change from the top down, you know, starting with, you know, the number one seat, you know, and coming and moving on down to, you know, just the individuals that, you know, don't want to see change.
because you know, as you said, the status quo is, you know, it's unbearable at this point, Susan.
It just can't go on like this.
No.
We aren't treating people humanely if we allow this to continue.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know what their numbers. Do they have a peak point for what their numbers have to be before they actually take action and actually act?
I don't know. They've not issued a press release now in 9 days. Sure would be nice to know what's going on.
I haven't posted this, but just to and to notify our readers and our group members and our listeners, there was actually a guy that was actually killed, I think, on the 10th, April 10th, at Smith State Prison. He was stabbed at Smith State Prison. So, you know, they're not issuing press releases anymore on murders and things like that that's taking place, which that doesn't surprise me either. I mean, they don't have the virus under control, so issuing press releases on someone getting killed inside a department is not going to help their matters on anything.
No, you know, under the best of circumstances, prison is still a pressure cooker. And
yep.
We're in many ways made this much worse. A lot of the inmates are not getting store, or when they get store, they may get some envelopes, but they weren't able to get any soup or any tuna. It's a pressure cooker. These men and women are under a lot of stress just due to the situation, and then you add illness to it, and this response of the lack of prevention, the lack of care, very concerning. The situation I described earlier at Baldwin, the inmate who had been sick told this other mother that people were not asking for sick call because they were afraid of the treatment that they were receiving in the home. What have we come
yeah.
to?
All right. And then we see on yesterday, and I think a lot of facilities received this little care package from the wardens or whoever gave it to them. The money to purchase it came from the inmate fund, of course. So, you know, it's not like, you know, someone felt kind out of the kindness of their heart to purchase this stuff from. The money came from the inmate fund to purchase it. But, you know, it was passed out, and, you know, I called it a bribery, a bribery package where they can, you know, we'll give you these little zoom zoom and wham whams, and, you know, if you just keep quiet, and we'll give you a couple extra bars of soap and a roll of toilet paper if you just keep quiet, and we'll give you, you know, chicken boxes and Zaxby's and pizza. You know, just don't talk about, you know, the conditions, and don't talk about the shortage of staff, and don't talk about, you know, not being quarantined, and don't talk about, you know, you're sick and can't receive medical attention because they're claiming that you're sick, or that you're faking, or whatever the case may be in that circumstance. Just don't talk about that, and we'll give you a little package that you can, you know, hopefully, you know, to soothe you over for a couple of days.
It's just a sad situation all around.
Yeah, so, you know, and unfortunately, that's how the Department of Corrections, that's how they operate. You know, they don't like bad press, and I think we saw that yesterday. And like I said, yeah, and
I just don't understand, you know, what, if anything, the, you know, the bad press that we gave them. And I think it was you that said it yesterday. We don't have to give them bad press. They do a good job of that themselves.
Every single day.
Yep, every day. So, you know, we got to, you know, we just have to continue to be proactive and, you know, continue to try to do things. I did receive, and I'm not going to give their name or anything like that, but that soap and things, and, you know, it's going to get in. You know, we're going to donate it to someone else, and, you know, they're going to this soap is going to get in, and it's going to get into the hands of these people because they need it. We know they need it, and you know, I'm not going to say too much because, you know, I don't want it to not happen this time. You know, but it's going to get there, and you know, we're going to do our best to help in any way possible because, you know, we know the full story. We know what's taking place. And they're just not being properly taken care of in this time when they need it the most. So, you know, we're gonna continue to fight for them with our voices and, you know, with our whatever possible that we can do for them, you know, right now. Someone has to step up, Susan. You know, and I thank you for, you know, I thank you for, you know, everything that you do, all the information that you pass out, the contact information, the letters, you know, the phone calls, the advocacy that you give to these family members. You know, I know that this is has to be a, you know, a terrible time for them as well. I mean, you know, their loved one is already incarcerated, and now you have to deal with a global pandemic that, you know, unfortunately, people don't care about, you know. And it's just sad for those loved ones that's out there now that has to that's already dealing with trauma, that their incarcerated person, loved one, is locked up, but now have to put this on top of everything. Of, you know, is their health and safety being taken care of with all this that's going on?
Absolutely. You send your loved one off to prison, and you hope that he or she will receive health care, whether it's preventive care or care in response to a crisis. But you certainly can't count on it, and that's not a good feeling. Loved one behind the walls.
Yeah.
They'll be treatment.
Well, Susan, in our closing moments, I'm going to give you the opportunity and the floor to, you know, just to tell our listeners that's listening now, or the people that'll go back and listen to this show later today or this weekend. I'll give you an opportunity to, you know, just to tell everyone how they can contact you with anything that they may need, you know, give your group information or just any information that you'd like to put out there.
Oh, thank you, Joshua. Yes, everybody, I'm Susan Burns, and I'm the founder of a Facebook group, They Have No Voice. Well, we are a very diverse group and pretty much apolitical. We kind of stay away from that and deal with the issues that are occurring behind the walls. I do believe that there are ways to drive change, and I do everything I can every single day to make it as easy as possible for the problems to see the light of day. And I think that each one of us is only one voice, but collectively, we have a lot of strength when we speak out. Some of the stories that we and our loved ones have to tell leave the listeners speechless that these things happen. And yeah, they do. I can't count the number of things over the last 5 years that I've found out and said, no, that can't be true. Yeah, it can be. And not all this why. I think we all know. You know, we're not naive here. We know that our loved ones may very well deserve to be where they are. Maybe not, but that's not the issue. I think the conditions more than anything else, what has to be changed.